Welcome to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Diving stop Seager. Toss on a hop to first. In time to get Simmons.
Three-run homer Robinson Cano off the lefty specialist Fernando Abad. And the Mariners lead it 5-4.
Goodbye, baseball. Leonis Martin with a walk-off. Two-run home run.
And the king, when the Mariners needed him the most, two hits over seven, scoreless innings.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for being back once again. We have another good one for you today. We'll get to that in just a second. First, I want to lay out the schedule the next couple of weeks for the podcast. Unfortunately, I think this is going to be the only one this week. I'm on the road the rest of this week, finishing up hoop season. So it's going to be tricky timing-wise. So I think this is going to be the only one this week. But next week, yeah, we're going to start doing our previews of other teams in the AL West. Start looking at Houston and Texas and Anaheim and Oakland as we really start to dial in next week. I mean, start counting down the days, right, till the regular season. We'll talk some WBC next week as well. That'll be fully going, checking in on with all the Mariners that are in it. Dozen in it, so we'll talk about that coming up. Spring training continues, an off day yesterday for the Mariners, but they'll continue to go despite some of the stars being away with the WBC. So a lot to get to as we get closer to the regular season beginning. So sorry this is the only one this week, but I promise next week we're really going to start to get it going as we get closer and closer. Today's going to be a good one, though. We're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that's bullpen. I enjoy talking bullpen theory. I enjoy talking bullpens because I think it's pretty interesting when you break down bullpens and talk to different people about how they would run a bullpen. Because really, I mean, everyone is a little bit different, I think, in how they would run a bullpen, whether going numbers, whether going feel. When do you use this guy? When do you use your closer? How often? You know, that sort of thing. So I think it's pretty interesting to talk about bullpen theory. And we're going to talk about the Mariners' bullpen specifically and how it shapes up this year and how it compares to last year. So this is going to be a topic not only for today, but I think it's going to be a topic often. So here we go. Bullpens. Now it's time to talk some bullpens. Jake Mailhot is with us once again, who has been writing something very interesting on lookoutlanding.com. And before we dive into it too much, Jake, just kind of give an idea for people that haven't seen it, what you've been doing at Lookout Landing involving the bullpen.
Yeah, it all started with actually the Lookout Landing podcast. I was on there a few weeks ago, and we were talking through the Mariners pitching staff, and we came to the bullpen, and we talked about the different options in the bullpen. And that got me thinking about, just the different philosophies for bullpen usage that have come up in the last few years. And so I started a survey on Lookout Landing just to see what the community thought about how to use the Mariners bullpen. And I came up with some really interesting results.
That's the funny part about it. I think you could ask 100 people how to use a bullpen, and you probably get 100 different answers, and you did get some different answers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there's sort of this split here that's come up in the last couple of years about whether the traditional bullpen roles like closers, setup man, middle relief, whether those are the best way to utilize relievers. And seeing the way that Terry Francona used Andrew Miller in the World Series this past year really brought that divide into stark contrast, bringing Andrew Miller in his best reliever as early as the fifth inning. Mm-hmm. Was really interesting.
And I think it is really interesting. I love this topic of conversation because there's a couple sides to it. One is I think you can look at the numbers and look at the evidence and say, yeah, that is probably by the numbers an ideal way to use the bullpen. At the same time, you're dealing with human beings as well. You're dealing with routines. You're dealing with workloads, that kind of thing. So it's an interesting conversation about how to utilize a bullpen.
Yeah, I think so. My background is in education, and in the classroom, consistency and predictability are huge keys to success for students. And it's the same in the workplace too. If you know what your defined roles are and your responsibilities are day in and day out, it just makes your job a lot easier to complete. And that's no different for a major league reliever. As if they understand what their roles are and when they're going to probably going to come into the game, they can start preparing mentally and physically when it's appropriate for them to start preparing, rather than just being thrown into a game without any sort of preparation. There's also a financial aspect to bullpen roles, right? The arbitration process rewards relief pitchers who accumulate saves. And so there's an incentive for players to try and get into the ninth inning to accumulate those saves so that they can maximize their potential earnings during their arbitration years. And it gives teams an incentive to install veteran closers, right? That they've signed to contracts rather than installing young players who haven't gone through the free agency process.
It's such an interesting dynamic, and I think a difficult one that managers, especially now with all the information, that they have to try and work through.
Yeah, so I was reading some of Terry Francona's comments about using Andrew Miller during the World Series, and he basically told Andrew Miller, you need to be ready to go into the game as early as the fifth inning. Yeah. And that could mean going in the game in the fifth inning, or it could mean going in the game in the eighth inning. But that's a huge amount of time that Andrew Miller's like trying to prepare himself mentally, physically, without knowing exactly when he's going to go in. All credit to Andrew Miller for being that flexible and being willing to be used in any way that Terry Francona wanted. But not every relief pitcher is going to be able to do that the same way.
And I think, too, there's a difference between World Series, playoffs, maybe even September baseball, and the rest of the season. I think it would be really difficult for a reliever not only mentally, but also workload-wise, to try and replicate that sort of thing for an entire regular season. That would be tough.
Yeah, if you extrapolate the Andrew Miller's innings pitched in the World Series to like an entire season, he would have pitched like 250 innings in the regular season, which is just unrealistic for a reliever, right? It's just completely crazy. So it's definitely true. Like managers have to manage their workloads throughout the season. Postseason play has day offs all the time, and so you're getting a lot more rest more regularly. And even in September, you've got the increased roster size, and so you have a lot more just bodies in the bullpen to work through.
Well, and as you point out too, one of the reasons it works with Miller is you have Cody Allen at the back end, who's really a top third closer for sure. I mean, he's been outstanding. So not every team could get away with that sort of thing. I don't necessarily believe you have to have your best reliever as the closer, but if you're going to unleash a guy like Andrew Miller at the back, it works because you have Cody Allen back there.
Yeah, definitely. And even like the other set of men the Indians have on their team, like Brian Shaw or Zach McAllister, they're good enough that they can come in and after Andrew Miller and work through any jams that come up, even though Andrew Miller has been spent earlier in the game. And you're right. Not every team has that luxury. The Mariners certainly have a lot of great options in their bullpen, but they certainly don't have as many options as the Indians do.
That's true. And it's funny is I think every bullpen is different in how it shapes up. That's why I tend to think there's no hard and fast rule about how to work with a bullpen. I think you kind of deal with it from season to season with your personnel. And at least the way the Mariners bullpen shapes up, I actually think that Edwin Diaz works best as the closer in name when you look at some of the other arms and some of the other matchups you have. What do you think?
Yeah, I really do think that Diaz fits as our closer. And maybe it's even a modified closer, right? Maybe he comes in the eighth inning sometimes and gets a four or five out save if necessary. But he's got the background to do that, right? He was a starter in the minor leagues. So he's got the physical stamina to work as a modified closer. His stuff is just so good. He fits in the ninth inning. He's got the mentality for it, the drive for it, and I can't think of anyone else in our bullpen who would fit better.
Yeah, because part of it is you have some real tough matchup guys. You know, with Cishek, especially against righties, you can spot him in the seventh, eighth inning, and some with the other right-handed arms there as well.
Yeah, actually, Steve Cishek is a really interesting guy. He would be a great option as sort of like a modified Andrew Miller type who could come in early in the game and clean up any messes that happen in the sixth or seventh inning. And actually, even though, I mean, he's got that killer slider that is really hard for right-handed hitters to hit, he's actually has a higher strikeout rate against left-handed hitters, which should help him work through an entire inning, no matter who he's facing. But with the thing about Cishek is he doesn't have the stamina. He would only be able to handle an inning or so before we have to bring in someone else.
And when you look at this Mariners bullpen, I'm fascinated by some of the younger arms out of the pen, Altuvilla, Simmons, another one. How do you think this bullpen shapes up heading into the season?
Yeah, so thinking about last year's bullpen, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, they dealt with a lot of injuries, right? Joaquin Benoit was injured in spring training. Evan Scribner was injured in spring training. So I think they had this idea for a bullpen that they wanted to use, but they couldn't implement it correctly because they were dealing with ineffectiveness and injuries. So this year, Scribner's back. We picked up a bunch of new guys like Simmons. Altuvilla's come up for the minors. And I think what we're seeing is Jerry DePoto's collecting skill sets. And let me explain what I'm trying to say is rather than filling roles like trying to find an eighth inning setup guy or trying to find a seventh inning setup guy, he's collecting players who have similar roles that are sort of interchangeable, right? When you think about like Nick Vinson and Evan Scribner and Casey Fine, they're all fly ball guys who have really, really elite strikeout to walk ratios. And Altuvilla and Shea Simmons and even Tony Zick, they're strikeout guys. They're able to come in the middle of an inning and clean up any mess that might pop up. Those three guys are also ground ball guys. So if you need a double play, you can bring one of those guys in and get that double play. And then you've got your left-handers, Zipchinski and Pezos and Zach Curtis. Those are all options for the left-handed specialist, and which we didn't really have last year because Furbish was hurt and Nuno was pretty ineffective against left-handers.
Yeah, that changes the scenario because you're right. It was really tough to play matchup, you know, in the seventh and eighth when they really didn't have a lefty to go to get a left-handed bat.
Yeah, and I think last year we also saw there was just a lack of options for Servais to go to. We saw him leaning on Nick Vincent pretty heavily in the middle of the season, and we saw like at the end of the season Nick Vincent lost a lot of his effectiveness because he'd just been used so much earlier in the season. We didn't have someone like Evan Scribner who could come in and play the same role as Nick Vincent. And so, yeah, there's just a lack of options. And so I think this year with the bullpen, it was just creating all of those options for Servais to utilize in any situation that might pop up in the later innings and have multiple iterations of those skill sets that he's able to use so he doesn't lean on one particular reliever over and over again.
Providing health with everyone, what would, in your mind, the ideal Mariners bullpen look like this season?
That's a great question. So I think Edwin Diaz is the closer, and I really think that Cishek could be used sort of in that Andrew Miller mold, where he's coming in the most critical situations before the ninth inning. I think Nick Vinson and Evan Scribner, they're really great pitchers, but because of their problems with the home run earlier in their career, I think they're best used at the start of an inning. So maybe that's at the start of the eighth inning or the start of the seventh inning. But they're because their walk rates are so low, they're not going to be creating big rallies whenever they come in the game. And so if they do give up a home run, it's just going to be a solo shot, and that's not too bad of a trade-off. And their strikeout rates are so good that even if they do allow a few base runners, they should be able to get out of it. And then Yeah, Dan Altavilla and Shea Simmons. I like both of those guys as sort of your firemen who come in the middle of a rally and kill it. And I hope that Tony Zick comes back healthy. I really like his stuff, and so he's just one of those another options that you can stash in AAA and call up when needed. And then as far as lefties go, Zupchinski he's been one of the best relievers against left-handed batters in the game for the past couple of years, and so yeah, I think he's just your option against lefties, and that's all you need to use him for. You don't need to have him face righties or anything else. Just go after those lefties.
Right. I mean, bullpens, you never know season to season, but on paper, how do you think it shapes up this season compared to last year?
Oh, I think it's a lot better. I think, Edwin Diaz just changed everything last year. And the fact that he was in installed as the closer, and that meant that freed up Steve Cishek to come in as a setup man. I think that alone makes this year's bullpen far away better than what we started with last year. And even the health of Evan Scribner. I think he's a really underrated guy that is going to really impress. I mean, last year when he was healthy for the last few games in September, he was great out of the bullpen for us. And I'm really excited about Altavilla. I mean, he's shown some really, really great progress last year. He didn't really impress in his brief call up in September, but he's got the stuff. He's got the slider to be a really killer reliever for the Mariners.
Well, Jake, good stuff as always. Thanks for coming on again. It's always fun to talk to you. I recommend checking out lookoutlanding.com. Follow the series because bullpens, I think, are such a fascinating conversation because I really think it's such a balance of working the numbers and working the human side of things as well, which makes the conversation, I think, very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Mariners 3, Giants 1 as we open things up here in the top of the fourth. Travis Ishikawa to begin things, and it's a real treat, a real pleasure to be joined by a man who is in, well, many Hall of Fames, but the voice of the Giants, John Miller. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure, and here's one of your guys, one of your hometown guys, Travis Ishikawa. And outside of San Francisco, where Travis made his legend, winning the pennant for the Giants with that big home run, the Bobby Thompson moment, second Giant in history to win the pennant for them with a walk-off homer. Outside of San Francisco, I think Seattle was the place where that resonated the most.
Yeah, grew up in Federal Way, went to high school there.
And he's up, by the way. I know this is radio, and the count goes to 3-0. Yeah.
Oh, we're willing to put that aside for now. John, what have the last, well, I suppose the entire 5 years, but especially the three of the five, what have those been like for you, watching all the games and calling the games for the Giants? It's been a magnificent run.
Well, as he takes ball four, and Ishikawa leads off with a walk here against Iwakuma, Casey McGee will come up. We've kind of gotten used to the whole winning thing, you know, getting into October and winning in October and whatnot. And really, I hate to say it, but in the years when they haven't won it now, those 2 years in the last five, we're really kind of down about those years.
Those are the odd years where you don't win.
Dave Fleming, my partner in radio, Mike Kruko, Dwayne Kuiper on television side. We whine a lot in those years, let me tell you.
First pitch to McGee. He swings and slices it down the right field line. Long run there for Smith, and it's a foul ball. Strike one to Casey McGee.
But I think the Giants, who have such a long history, they were born in New York in 1883. This will be the 133rd season of Giants baseball. And the San Francisco Giants fully embrace their New York heritage, their New York roots. Each season after winning the World Series, they went to New York in the following January for the New York Baseball Writers Dinner, where somebody was going to receive a trophy and an MVP award or the postseason MVP, whatever. And they take the World Series trophy with them to New York because there are still Giants fans in New York after all these years.
0-1 pitch, swinging a ground ball through the left side. Seager went to his left to try to stab it, but instead it rolls into left field where Ackley finds it. Ishikawa into second base, McGee to first.
But it's a really cool
coast-to-coast team.
I always thought it was kind of a cool story because the first year they did it back in 2011, Willie Mays went back. And part of the deal was that he was going back to the old neighborhood where the Polo Grounds used to be, the old home of the Giants for many, many years. And Willie lived near the ballpark when he first got there and used to play those pictures you would see of Willie Mays playing stick ball with the kids. That's where he did it. So they had an assembly set up at the local public school there. And they had all the students in the school studied who Willie Mays was and wrote papers about him and then all got a chance to meet Willie Mays. And so Willie and the trophy and the Giants went back to, and sort of paraded around New York. And they, you know, they called the Yankees and the Mets and said, would you mind if we did this? And they said, no, please go ahead. And that first year, in 2011, you know, Buster Posey had come on in May of that year from the minor leagues and helped the Giants get better and helped them get to the World Series. And Willie said Buster Posey kind of reminded him of him. Because that's the way it happened with Willie back in 1951. The Giants were not doing that well. They brought up Willie almost the same date as Posey came up.
Really?
And, of course, in 51, they ended up on Bobby Thompson's fabled home run, winning the pennant, going to the World Series. And then Willie saw Posey and the things that he did and the way he elevated the ball club. He says, wow, there's something familiar about this guy. I'm sorry, Justin Maxwell's the hitter, Rick.
Just keep going, buddy. We love listening to you.
But
those are great stories.
The Giants had a meeting with all these old Giants fans. There's still two different New York Giants baseball fan clubs that's been passed along from father to son down through the generations. And the Giants took the World Series trophy and Willie Mays and Buster Posey over to meet with these people. And they said that they wanted to do a little interview with Buster. And Willie said, oh, I'll handle that.
Really?
He wanted to interview Buster because he thought he knew just what to ask him because he's Willie Mays, and he was the last guy who burst upon the scene the way Buster Posey had for the Giants. Yeah. So that's part of the fun with the Giants, I think, too, is that they have that kind of a history and a tradition and a heritage. And
well, Willie still hangs out with the ball club at spring training, doesn't he?
He didn't make it this year because he's he injured himself.
John, please, take over.
That one is hit about 40 miles down the left field line. It's headed for the Grand Canyon. A three-run homer for Justin Maxwell right down the left field line. And
we appreciate you not sounding too enthusiastic. You're kind of right down the middle of the road there. That's very impressive. Maxwell absolutely crushes that pitch. It's a three-run shot that gives the Giants the lead right back, 4-3 San Francisco. Didn't mean to throw you into that mid-flight of the ball there, John.
I was so speechless there for a moment because how far did that one go?
A long way. It landed on one of the white umbrellas out there. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 umbrellas out there. It landed on the farthest one back. Long home run by Maxwell. The kid's strong.
So that's only his second home run. Trying to win a job with this Giants club, and his ability to do things like that is why they brought him in, and they haven't seen a whole lot of that so far from him this spring. So That was a big fly. Very impressive. And Andrew Susak, one of the Giants prospects out of the minor league system, who did a great job coming up for the minors last year as a backup to Buster Posey. And he was a great addition to the ball club. And he quickly has two strikes facing Iwakuma here. John, there's a called strike, and now a swing and a miss. Strike two. Okay, go ahead, Rick.
It's third.
No. You don't pass a torch like that in this inning. You know, John, we were talking about Bruce Bochy and how at this point with what he has done World Series-wise with San Francisco and the pennant with San Diego, he's a virtual lock whenever his time is up managing to enter the Hall of Fame. What's it like being around Bruce Bochy every day?
Well, Iwakuma rings up Susak looking a called third strike, maybe a little slider on the outside. And so there is one away. This game has gone south since you guys invited me over.
You got this play-by-play thing done. Yeah.
By the way, 4-3 Giants here in the fourth inning as Juan Perez comes up. Bruce Bochy, and he's kind of like a – you'd have to bring John Wayne back from the grave probably to play him if there was the Bruce Bochy story in a movie.
Yeah.
Because Bochy, you know, he's what, about 6'5", 6'6"? He's huge. And he has that kind of a voice. You know, he's got that southern kind of a cowboy type voice. And, Boch, what's wrong with this ball club? We need to be better. We know it. And I may have to kick a few guys around here to get us out there and do our job better. And that's the way he talks.
He
does
talk like that, doesn't he?
So, but I think the players really enjoy playing for, although sometimes he's intimidating because he just by his very size.
How's he feeling? I mean, he had a heart issue earlier this spring. He had a couple of arteries that were cleaned up.
He had a real frightening day there. He was feeling very poorly. They took him to the hospital. He started having the chest pains. And I think they called it, they did two heart stents. Mm-hmm. And not the big surgery with the bypass, but the stents kind of do the same thing to open
up
those whatever clogging was there. He says that his wife is with him now every moment that he's away from the ballpark, sort of. And I was like, what do you mean? Basically, when it's time for dinner or breakfast, she's there sitting right. And he says, she does an order for me, but she might as well. Ooh, just missing to Juan Perez.
John, I'm going to just so we're clear on something, I'm not going to do any more play-by-play here. So if there is play-by-play to be had, John,
this is your inning.
It will come from you.
Oh, your inning.
That's
what
I was saying.
I kept wanting
to we're not very possessive here in the Seattle booth. Not like San Francisco.
Whoever wants to talk can talk.
It's whatever. It's just kind of anything goes. It's the Northwest. You know, it's flip-flops and cut-off shorts, John.
Well, what happened there, John?
Oh. Iwakuma throws and a swing and a miss. He struck him out. All right. Two down and Ere Adrianza will come up for the Giants. But Bochy says he immediately felt better. They did the procedure, the stents. They told him he shouldn't go back and the games had not started yet this spring. It was very early in the spring. And but he said it drove him nuts. He said almost gave me a heart attack having to just sit around doing nothing for 3 days, but he says he feels great, and he said it was kind of a good warning to him that maybe some things were in underway that could have been real serious for him. So he's eating better, and he says he feels great. He looks great. There's a fly ball into left, and under it is Ackley, former first round draft choice out of University of North Carolina, and he makes the catch.
John, we're willing
hit
to
hit that ball. Say that guy's name. We're trying to figure it out.
Ere Adrianza has gone down.
John, Kevin's pulled out his wallet. He's willing to pay you twice if you come back in the bottom of this inning. Can you stick around, or do you need to get back to San Francisco?
See if I can get three more for the Mariners now.
All righty. We appreciate that. We're back with John Miller. Giants have taken the lead. It's 4-3.
See you later!